Getting a good night's sleep can be easier said than done. As someone who's dealing with roof rats up here in Scottsdale, I certainly know the feeling. But don't worry, because our good friends at CBDMD have exactly what you need to get the sleep that you deserve. CBD PM blends melatonin and other sleep-promoting ingredients with 500 milligrams of high-quality CBD to create a powerful and effective sleep aid. And to make it even easier to get the year started off right, get the sleep that you deserve, that we all deserve. They're offering all our listeners 25% off their next order when you use the promo code NBA at checkout. Again, that's cbdmd.com, promo code NBA, for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD products from CBDMD.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All-star debates and game previews. On today's episode of Locked On Phoenix Suns, we are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow our show on Twitter and on Instagram at LockedOnPHXSuns, and you can follow me on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. Sam Cooper is our guest today of the Timeline Podcast and Bright Side of the Sun, one of my favorite people to talk to about the Suns. I wanted to preview the last eight games. We are just around the corner from the end of this first half, and so I wanted to preview those games. A lot of Western Conference games, five big ones, six in total. The Minnesota Timberwolves not scaring me all that much, but we get into all of that, and we start before that preview with All-Star debates. Some questions I had for Sam as a Suns fan himself about how he's feeling and thinking about this All-Star stretch. It's a fun one. A little long, but that's what I like to do for you guys on Fridays, so I think you'll enjoy it. Sam is great as always. I'm fine with being a little bit of a homer around All-Star time. I think Chris Paul and Devin Booker have a genuine case, but we get into all of it as well as those previews. Memphis, Portland, New Orleans, Golden State, and the Lakers all coming up in the next couple of weeks, so listen to the end for those previews. But without further ado, here is Sam Cooper. Sam Cooper of the Timeline Podcast and Bright Side of the Sun joins me now to talk a little All-Star, talk a little schedule stuff. I always like to preview stretches of games. Haven't been able to do it too much, so we will get into that in the second and third segments of the show. But Sam, to start things off here, I have a question for you.
Shoot.
How are you feeling about the All-Star teams, just generally? Like, is it a thing that matters to you? Are you nervous about the guys the Suns may or may not have in there? What's in your head?
Am I nervous in what sense? Am I nervous for their health, or am I nervous for the narratives that
are you nervous about whether they will be involved?
They will be involved. I'm pretty confident.
Well, Chris Paul kind of has to be there, so that's a cheat. You can't.
Is that true though? is that true? Because here's my thing. I think we're guaranteed a spot. Okay. With as good as the Suns are right now, they're guaranteed a spot. I don't know. There are enough good candidates in the West. And as we've seen media members put out their lists, because it seems like everyone is releasing their ballot or their list now, we are seeing in many cases, I think David Aldridge with The Athletic today came out with both Booker and Paul.
Yeah,
on his ballot, and he was the first guy I've seen to actually have both. Most guys are just giving it to one or the other. So I don't know who. Once it comes to drawing the reserves, I think we can start here. We're both in agreement. They're not getting a starter. We expect that announcement to come in the next 24 hours. They're not getting a starter, right?
Yeah, it'll probably be out by the time people listen to this. I think they're doing it on the TNT games on Thursday while we're recording. Okay. What I meant by Chris Paul has to be there is, as the union president, I feel like he has to. So I thought going to say, like, well, of course they'll be there because Chris Paul has to be there.
Right. No, I didn't even think of that, honestly. He will probably be making
the trip to Atlanta. Yeah, but you're right. David Aldridge had both guys. Michael Pina of Sports Illustrated had neither. I think Ben Golliver, his podcast host, yeah, is my call out of Michael Pena. He's no longer there. Maybe it might be KOC at this point that gets the mantle as the major media guy who cares and supports the Suns. But Zach Lowe had neither, if I'm remembering correctly. I think Simmons and Kevin O'Connor both at the Ringer had just Chris Paul.
Just Chris Paul.
So, yeah, I guess I feel like you're probably right. I kind of feel like in a lot of ways, what I've heard in these debates is that it may come down more to, do the Jazz get a third guy or do the Suns get a second guy? Or is that fair? Or I don't know. Yeah, there are a lot of candidates.
That is fair. I mean, honestly, if we're being just honest, I don't really get the whole Mike Conley thing. He's had a hell of a season, don't get me wrong. But like, if it comes down to, I guess why it's confusing is because I think it's been clear to me that Chris Paul has had the better season. Now, we've been on Suns Twitter. We've polled Suns fans. That's obviously not everyone thinks that. In fact, I think if you believe that too, I don't know if you do. So I guess that's my
Paul
first question.
Paul should make it over Booker.
That Paul has had the better season. And that's why it's a nuanced discussion, because I think he definitely has had the better season to date. But are coaches going to reward that, or are they just, I think coaches might almost be more inclined to take a gander at the standings, look at where the Suns are, say, oh, we need to reward them. Who's their leading scorer? It's Booker. And like, that's the logical process.
I think
like,
coaches are smart enough to
not that they're dumb.
No, of course not. But like, I think actually the opposite, which is that I feel like coaches would be more likely to lean Booker. Or to lean Paul, I'm sorry, than to lean Booker, because I think if you're sort of doing it, you know, I'm not saying every coach does it lazily, but there are probably some who are like, yeah, I got to do this thing. And so they get their ballot out. And I feel like those people, they're going to say, oh yeah, Chris Paul's on the Suns and they're playing well. Of course. Like,
yeah.
I heard a lot of that analysis from smart people early on in the season. And I'm still hearing it, where it's sort of like the easy thing to say, if the Suns get brought up in a conversation, is how well sure. Chris Paul has changed things for them. And we all know that's not quite the whole truth. So,
yeah, man,
I think it's that Chris has had the better season, but, I think honestly, I think both are more deserving than Mike Conley. And I feel like, honestly, both might be more deserving than Donovan Mitchell. But what do I know?
Are both, and here's where it gets interesting. I agree, both are more deserving than Mike Conley. Both are also more deserving than Shea. You know, like Shea was the person that KOC slipped into his last wild card spot, not Mike Conley, which I thought was interesting. Are both better than De'Aaron Fox, though?
I don't think so. I really love De'Aaron Fox, but I just feel like it's just going to be so frustrating. I actually wasn't trying to spend as much. I knew this would happen, but I have another question for you. So I want to ask you that. But my thing is, it would just be so frustrating to watch Booker, who's been probably an all-star candidate for three seasons prior to this one, but really only taken seriously last year, and then makes it, of course, as the injury replacement, because he wasn't winning, become like a snub to guys on worse teams when he finally is winning. And I know that would bother the living shit out of him. So that's just where I fall down on it. And that's why I tend to default to him over Fox, over Shea. I know Mitchell, you know, the argument there would be that they are winning, but I think you watch Suns games and you watch Jazz games, and it feels to me like it's pretty obvious Devin Booker's a better player at this point, but I get you want to reward Utah. They've only lost five freaking games. So it is what it is. But my question for you, on a little bit of a different note, but I'll tie it back together. Do you think Zach LaVine should be an all-star?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I guess the better question is, who holds him out? I mean, is it crazy to say, Brandon, this does not necessarily mean he's a better player, but Zach LaVine is averaging 28, 5, and 5. The Bulls are not good, but they're not that bad. They're like as good as the Suns were last year, which is not that bad of a team. I think Zach LaVine's having a better season than Devin Booker's ever had. So I think keeping him off the All-Star game would be insane.
Okay, so you pulled it exactly where I figured you might, and where I hoped that we could take it.
You baited me right into the hot take.
Because I feel on Suns Twitter like I see people raising Zach LaVine up. And I feel like it's pretty obvious where the connection is coming from. Having championed Devin Booker's cause for an assortment of awards and accolades and respect levels over the years, that they see a new symbol of their cause in the Eastern Conference in our nation's third biggest city. And they feel like that if Zach LaVine doesn't make it, that it's somehow, you know, just adding to the disrespect that they've felt for what Booker did and the way he was not put up on a pedestal. Is that fair? Is that why this is happening? Because I've seen a lot of it and I just don't really get any, I don't get why a bunch of Suns fans care about Zach LaVine for any other reason.
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't seen a lot of other Suns fans care about it.
I saw Max McCauley was going on a little bit of a rant about it, and I felt like he was on it for the same reason. I've seen it in little pockets.
I mean, dude, we are in this era of unfathomable levels of offensive talent. And, you know, a lot of it is because I think the players are legitimately getting better every year. Like, I often think about, I forget who it was, but someone tweeted yesterday about, does Damian Lillard have an MVP narrative if Portland keeps eking out these wins? And regardless of that, Damian Lillard averaged like 30-8 last year on some of the best efficiency we've ever seen from a high volume guard. And like no one called him a top five player even. The level of offensive superstardom in the league is absurd. And I think a lot of it is because you're not really allowed to play defense in a way that checks these guys anymore. But also a lot of it is just legitimate sheer talent. And yeah, I mean, I am probably one of those guys that's gotten a little bit carried away with the LaVine narratives. One thing I was saying yesterday is this is a guy who's going to be a free agent in 2022, just 2 years from now. And he's, I mean, maybe going to be the best free agent in that class. Kawhi is going to be unrestricted. Steph is going to be unrestricted, but they're both going to be well into their 30s. Meanwhile, you've got LaVine.
Steph's not going anywhere. I wouldn't.
And even if he does, I mean, is it crazy to say, would you rather have a 34-year-old Steph Curry long-term or a 27-year-old Zach LaVine? Is it crazy? He's averaging 28, 5, and 5. I'm talking about LaVine. This is another year and a half from now. This is assuming a path where he continues to get better. Are we sure?
He has like one assist to every, he has 140 assists to 105 turnovers. He doesn't play a lick of defense. He doesn't really operate off the ball very much, like in an effective way that makes his teammates better. I don't
say that, man. I think this is, I don't think it's exactly the Booker situation. I don't think it's a one-to-one comparison. But I do think there's a guy here where
if Devin Booker was on this Bulls team, they'd be the like 5 seed.
I really think
I know the Bulls are like overrating, so that's not that. It's not that extreme.
We're underrating the effect of how much of a dumpster fire Chicago has been. For
they have their respectable coach now. They have their, you know, they have the veterans. We never saw Ryan McDonough bother to sign. Thaddeus Young is in there. Yeah, Otto Porter's in there. Satoransky's in there. These Garrett Temple, these guys who we never saw come around Phoenix. I don't know. I feel
you're
like
not,
I actually feel like
me.
it's devaluing Devin Booker to put this LaVine season on a pedestal.
You're not selling me on Satoransky and Garrett Temple as being, oh, look, hey, we put a legitimate core around this
Satoransky
guy. He's got
was
Satoransky
a guy
and
that,
Garrett Temple.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Satoransky's a guy that I know Suns fans wanted desperately here for a long time. So
look,
and Thaddeus Young.
At the end of the day, the discussion and the reason I'm bringing it up is not for me to say that Zach LaVine is better than Devin Booker. I don't even think the two are necessarily comparable. You just asked me, is he an all-star? I think the answer to that is absolutely yes.
And the reason probably is that it's the East. And so if Devin Booker was in the East, I think that first season when he felt like an all-star caliber player, he might've made it, you know? So the things are different. The levels, the sort of baseline for each conference is clearly different if we're talking about fringe contenders being sort of the LaVine in the East and then the Booker Paul class in the West. I think that illustrates plenty how different the baselines are. But to go back to Booker and the challenges that he faces this year, I wanted to ask you another question that's just been percolating on my mind thinking about this All-Star ballot. And it is, Are you personally okay with Devin Booker getting in as the inevitable player who will have to replace Anthony Davis in the All-Star game?
Yeah, of course.
It's better than nothing, but would it feel hollow now that to have that happen twice rather than him just making it fair and square? If Mike Conley gets voted in and Booker has to come in the back door, does that feel cheap to you?
Here's what we have to remember too, is it's not just Anthony Davis. CJ McCollum, before he went down, was having a crazy year. And it pains me to say that a little bit, because he was the guy I was saying, like, I was so confident too back in the offseason. I was like, oh, look at Portland. They're frauds. They're going in, you know, people are overrating these little moves that they made over the offseason. What I didn't account for was that CJ McCollum, among other things, was that CJ McCollum would take such a big leap when he did play. And he would have been an all-star lock. So it still would have been difficult. Like it's not just Anthony Davis that, but yeah, to answer your question, I don't really think it feels cheap at all. You take an all-star spot. And most importantly, 5 years from now, no one's going to remember. Like you had to remind me just now that he was an all-star replacement last year. I didn't even remember. That's how short my memory is.
That's fair.
So I think most people are not remembering this stuff 2 or 3 years from now, and they're just happy to see the star next to his name. When they check the basketball reference page.
Yeah. Yeah. And to do it 2 years in a row and hopefully many years in a row after this, you know, I agree. Like when it's 2040 and we're looking back on Devin Booker's career, I don't think many folks are going to be, but those first and second ones were as a replacement. But they'll
mostly be focusing on the championships.
Hopefully, the gold star one. Yeah. Whatever that symbol is on the page. Do you think Booker cares would be my last question before we wrap this segment up.
I think he does. Do I think he cares about being in Atlanta, like for the, you know, the super spreader event or whatever? Not necessarily, but do I think he cares generally about getting the respect of his peers, even if that also means, you know, the coaches? Yeah, I think that matters to him. Not even so much in a legacy sense, just as much as he believes, rightly so, that he's one of the top talents in this league and he wants to earn that respect from the rest of his peers. I would guess that it does matter to him.
Yeah. And I think it doesn't probably matter to him if he's an injury replacement, because he's smart enough to know that the West is a bloodbath of talent. I don't think that's the right phrase, but you know what I mean? And it's just really hard, and he missed time. If he didn't get injured, I think maybe he has a little bit of a better case for people if they start fast. I mean, he's a very aware guy. He understands the level of talent in the league. He really is passionate about the NBA and basketball and all that stuff. So I think he just gets that. And I think if he makes it, he'll be perfectly content. We'll preview these games, talk about kind of how things close off. It won't impact All-Star stuff because the voting is already done. They just haven't told us who gets it yet. So unfortunately, it won't pad that, but it'll obviously tell us a lot about how this Suns team looks heading into the break. We'll do that right after a break of our own. BetOnline.ag is the fastest and the easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports action. Football might be over, sure, with the Super Bowl done, but the NBA, college basketball, the NHL, even the MLB are in full swing. Pitchers and catchers reported this week. Everyone else not too far behind. The valley is heating up with spring training baseball. So that means sports all the time, even with football not around anymore. It's honestly the best time to earn money because it's every single night. BetOnline even has you covered on awards, TV shows, reality TV. So there's real-time updated odds and props on just about everything that you can imagine. It's the best way to place a bet, and it's free to sign up at betonline.ag. So head to the website or use your mobile device to download their app. Go ahead and sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. What you're going to need to do is use the promo code LOCKEDON. So again, betonline.ag, go to the website, download their app, sign up today, use the promo code LOCKEDON when you make your first deposit, and you will get that 50% welcome bonus. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. All right, back here with Sam Cooper of the Timeline Podcast and Bright Side of the Sun. Guys, I wanted to remind you, get more of the sports news that you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. The great Peter Bukowski hosts the show, breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts all across the country, across every single sport. So start your day with all the sports news that you need in under 20 minutes by subscribing to Locked On Today wherever you get your podcasts. All right, Sam. So looking at the next three games specifically, because I think they're really interesting. Yeah, there's no Clippers in there. There's no Jazz in there. There's no Lakers. But you're seeing three games in the tier of teams that the Suns probably particularly have to be concerned with if they want to, stay in the top four where they are now, but especially avoid that play-in game, which is probably the most important thing. So you got at New Orleans, at Memphis, and against the Trailblazers at home. Which one stands out to you the most that we can start with?
Let's start with New Orleans. I think that's a really interesting game because this team has already played New Orleans twice. They blew them out once and they got blown out once. So I think there were a lot of lessons to learn from last time. And, you know, with any of these teams, by the way, it really could go either way, but I think they're just an interesting matchup.
Yeah, the Pelicans are the best offense in the NBA over the past 2 weeks. I was looking at this for something else I'm writing, and I was watching their game last night against Portland, which was really fun matchup. Just Zion and Dame going back and forth in the fourth quarter. Dame ends up winning the game as he typically does. But yeah, the best offense in the league over the past 2 weeks. I'm sure people have seen clips all over the internet of the stuff they're doing with guards screening for Zion, especially JJ Redick, which is just fun, you know, basketball nerd stuff. Zion's playing better defensively. So they're going to be a handful. My question for you, the thing I was thinking about with this one, after we saw what they did with Giannis, do you think Ayton just defends Zion from the opening tip? Cause we saw it in the fourth quarter of the last one.
He really should. I'm glad you mentioned the JJ Redick thing. Cause here's what I want to say first. Zion, here are his stats in February: 27 points, 5.5 rebounds, 4.4 assists per game on 67% from the field, 50% from three. Now he only takes like one of those game. And 80% from the free throw line. He's a handful. And here's what he did in the last game. When Phoenix got blown out, he had 28 points on 12 of 14 shooting. I think anyone can admit he's always going to be a handful, but giving up 28 points to the guy in 14 shots, whatever way you defended him, was an abject disaster. And so what I did is I went back to that game. I looked at the way that the Suns guarded him. And I'm really glad you mentioned the JJ Redick screening thing, because it comes to one of my pet peeves about the Suns defense right now. And really, you know, I hate to harp on the Brooklyn loss, because I'm sure you already did a podcast on that, but it's still fresh in my mind. The Suns are switchable. It's great that they're switchable. I like our roster. You know, you've got Jay Crowder, Mikal Bridges, and DeAndre Ayton, and all these guys who can switch onto the perimeter, and it's an advantage and it's modern. And we talk all the time when we mention, like, you know, scouting draft prospects, how important that is. That being said, you really saw in the last game when Zion played the Suns just how much the Suns use it as a crutch. I rewatched that game, and there were several possessions where JJ Redick would come and screen, and the Suns would just concede the mismatch. And suddenly it would be Langston Galloway. There was literally a possession where Langston Galloway was on Zion after a JJ Redick screen. And I thought, what the hell are they doing? Like, and it's interesting because it didn't stand out to me so much last time, because I think we were so lost in the focus of, remember at the time it was like, should Jay Crowder start? Should Cam Johnson start? And that's an important question, but it doesn't matter if you're going to concede the mismatch that easily by just switching everything. So
yeah.
Should, now to your point with the question you actually asked me, should DeAndre Ayton match up against him? I think the answer is yes, because I watched again, Zion missed two shots in the entire last game against Phoenix. He is the offensive superstar for New Orleans right now. And in one of those two missed shots, the guy who defended him best all game was like the one time he matched up with DeAndre Ayton, tried to drive it into his body from the perimeter, and Ayton stayed vertical at the rim and was able to contest it. So I think Ayton's the best guy you've got at him. I think Jay could do a decent job too. But the thing is, if you put Jay on him, if you put Ayton on him, no matter who it is, you got to cut the crap with the switching, because it's not worth it in this case. You're using it as a crutch, and you've got to find other ways to better dictate on defense. So he's not just, you know, running through you and getting the shots he wants every time. It's going to be tough regardless, because it's Zion and he's, you know, he's a mismatch for anyone. He's a mismatch for Jay Crowder too, but you can't allow him to just pick his spots and get his favorable matchups all night like they were last time. It was trash defense, as Devin Booker would call it. Honestly,
it was very bad. And a few things on that, with regard to the switching, I know Nekias Duncan of Basketball News has been on this all year, that teams, because of maybe the lack of practice time, the back-to-backs, whatever excuse you want to give, there's been just a ton of lazy switching in the league this year. Teams are playing smaller increasingly, whether they should be or not, and I think that contributes to it. But I've asked Monty Williams about the switching rules that they have in place, and it's going to sound fairly simple, but I think it's worth repeating just to show you how often the players break those rules, which is mostly he wants switching late in the clock, which is the obvious one. We know that's pretty much a rule standard around the league for teams that play modernly at this point. And then the other one is basically only like-sized players. So like the thing you're talking about with Langston Galloway, that should never happen according to how they want to play. Maybe that specific right. possession was late in the clock, but I think they should be smart enough to know we can't let our 6-foot sharpshooter defend the best, you know, interior scorer in the NBA. It's not going to end well. So I agree. I think we should and probably will see Ayton start on Zion, I would think. And then, you know, maybe it's Jay too, a little bit. We saw that with Giannis. It was primarily those two guys. Obviously, Jay yeah. pulls the chair out on Giannis late on that possession. But to a broader point too, the Pelicans don't have Zion handling in transition quite as much as Philadelphia or Milwaukee do with their sort of point center guys. But we've seen that it was something I wanted to draw attention to when it was happening. And I don't know if I did a good enough job of it on the podcast, but they basically let Giannis and Simmons get whatever they wanted in those games. And it just happened to not bite them because they won. But if they don't collapse in the paint, form that wall, have the help defense, Jay Crowder's maybe the best guy at that or one of in the entire league, but they rarely put him in position to do that because the rest of the team doesn't kind of help him out there. But Crowder mm-hmm. can be a guy who gets steals in those situations, just forms an absolute rock that nobody can. He's just so strong. We saw him do it with Miami last year. Like, they need to be doing a better job of defending when those guys get ahead of steam. So that'll decide, I think, that game just with how well Zion played last time.
And New Orleans is a bad shooting team. So you can really get away with more aggressive help at the nail. And Jay, to your point, is just one of the best guys at doing that. I do think the only other thing that's interesting, the little wrinkle, is the one that Steven Adams presents. Just and I think, I don't remember if it was this exact game, but I feel like one of the reporters asked Monty a question about this. And he was like, yeah, I mean, it's hard to put Ayton on him because then what do you do with Adams? Maybe it wasn't that exact game, but if it wasn't that one,
it was that game. And it's like, and so, you let Adams beat you because he's not good at offense.
But so ironically, and I say this, it's ironic because anyone who's followed me on Twitter knows the takes that I've had about this. But in an ironic way, it does make you think if this presents a good opportunity for another Frank Kaminsky game, as like put Kaminsky as the extra body on Adams to box out sure. because Ayton can't handle both him and Zion at the same time and just make sure that, you know, Ayton kind of stays under the rim and does his thing and prevents Zion from blowing right through him.
That was I think they went to that in the fourth quarter, if I'm remembering correctly, for a little chunk of that last game. And I do think as much as Monty's able to, he will try to get Frank Kaminsky some minutes just to keep him fresh, you know, reward him for playing so well and all that. So it would not surprise me. I think you're right. I hope that Crowder stays in that starting job. I hope that they do a little bit of a better job just generally making Crowder better at what he's so great at defensively. And they just haven't always done that this year. But this is a good test of it. We can skip the Memphis game for the most part. I'll just go quickly that they still don't have Jaren Jackson, still don't have Justice Winslow, but they are, you know, they're one of the only teams who's beat the Suns over the past few weeks. And
no Desmond Bane either.
a deciding factor. They're
being serious.
Really? Okay. Well, I guess he was starting, but I mean, we don't have to say much.
The only thing I'll say on this game is they don't scare me. If you had Jaren Jackson and Melton and Bane and all their guys healthy, they scare me a little bit. But if it's just Ja Morant versus the world, he's good, but he's too young to, and he's too incomplete of a player to really scare me. They can catch you on an off night for sure, but they're not a better team than Phoenix.
No. And I think, as long as you can kind of make life hard on Ja, you should be able to win that game. Portland, though, Dame's been playing like an MVP candidate. He tends to have these stretches every so often. You maybe hope not to catch him when that's happening, but it is. And so a couple things that I keyed in on, again, I said I watched that Pelicans Blazers game from Wednesday night, and they play Covington at center when Cantor's on the bench. So it could be a little bit of a redux of Jeff Green at center for the Suns. And seeing how they handle that look will be interesting. We've seen them have a lot of trouble when teams switch. That's been all year. If Portland tries to stymie them with that a little bit, I think it'll be interesting. And then just in general, another sort of trend that we've seen from the Suns that Portland might bring out of them is when the Suns get into battles of just who's going to make more threes, that's also something that can get them out of their offense. And with McCollum out and Nurkic out and all their big men sort of hurt right now, the Trailblazers have just mostly been playing Dame shooters, and then every, you know, 20 or so minutes a game, Cantor will be in there. But if Portland gets hot, or even if they just turn it into one of those types of games, I think that'll actually hurt the Suns. I think the Suns should be trying to stick to their usual scheme, which has been hard for them this year.
Well, and that's what scares me about Portland in general, is just they're so difficult to guard, because it's not just Dame anymore. Dame has done the thing, you know, where he takes like 7 or 8 pull-up threes a game for years now. He's always been great at it. CJ, which I kind of alluded to in our first segment of this podcast, he took a step too. But like, it's kind of built into their entire scheme now. Like, you've got Gary Trent Jr. doing it now. You've got Gary Simons Trent doing it. So you have multiple guys on their bench who have the pull-up ability to just step off and take it with confidence. And that's something that Phoenix just, like, if we're being honest, like, we just don't have built into our roster. It's sort of the final piece of the puzzle in a lot of ways that I feel this Suns offense is missing, of just the guy who can break defenses and force the pick and roll angles to kind of succumb to whatever he wants to do because he has that pull-up ability. Obviously, CP3 is great in the mid-range doing that, and Devin Booker's great in the mid-range doing that, but it doesn't really affect the pick and roll defense when they're doing it from the mid-range. You need a guy who can actually like destroy drop defenses just coming around and firing off a three. And the Blazers have like 3 or 4 of those guys now, and the Suns have 0 by my count. So yeah, they're always a threat to get hot. And that's the scary thing about the Blazers. Their defense, I'd like to think, won't be much of an issue, but I think it is a good point that you bring up about Covington. It might present another challenge in terms of the switching, and you need to be better than you were in the Brooklyn game about finding DA. And it's not just DA's fault; it's Chris Paul's fault and Booker's fault and everyone's fault to better capitalize on that matchup down low.
Yeah, I think they should be able to beat Portland. But even you said their defense there, I think if I'm remembering right from when I did a cursory glance over the kind of offense and defense stuff earlier, they are 11th, I believe, on defense over the past 2 weeks. Just, they're one of those teams that they're not going to beat themselves defensively. Like, they have limitations clearly, especially with how injured they are, but they're not going to fall apart, and they're smart and they have a scheme that works. It's very conservative and whatever. So they're not the type of team you can just completely exploit, like maybe we saw the Suns do to Brooklyn in that first half when they scored 75. So that'll be the most interesting one to me, but I'm going to put you on the record here. What is the record the Suns will finish these three games with?
I'll go 2-1. You know, 3-0 would be great. Obviously, it's just, these are three tough teams. They're not contending teams, but I think they're interesting, mostly because I think these three teams are so different. They force you to play in a different way every night. Like I was talking about New Orleans, you really got to key in on Zion, throw extra help on Zion, and not switch, as I said earlier, or else you're going to get destroyed. Memphis, you can guard a little bit more conservatively. It's like, you know, I mean, actually, I was just taking a look at his profile page. Ja Morant shooting 25% from deep this year, which I didn't even realize. So Memphis, without Dez Bain and Jaren Jackson Jr. to like space you out and provide gravity, you can kind of just deploy like a deep drop against them all game long and like force Ja to score at the rim or make sure his floater works. And then Portland, though, if you try to play a drop at all, you'll get destroyed. So it's like, you need to completely change the angles again and really try and trap them and play high. So it's just kind of interesting because these teams in particular are a challenge for Monty because it forces him to just use his brain in every game and make adjustments. And so I think that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, I just got off practice media availability before we started recording, and that was actually the thing that Monty sort of highlighted about this team, that he wants to just solidify as they round out this first half and get into the stretch run of the season is the ability to play differently, and the fact that that sort of matters in a way that it has not before, and it's going to continue to be very important as the season progresses. And so I think you're right to note that this will be a stretch that'll sort of test them in that way. I think I agree with you at 2-1. I don't necessarily have one team I think that I know they'll lose to. It's just on the sort of average, I would guess they lose one of these games. They also have the first two are a back-to-back Friday, Saturday. So that'll be tough. I think I actually take Jaws' ability to sort of break down the Suns' defense maybe a little bit more. I don't think you're not taking it seriously, but a little more seriously than you, just in that what he did in that fourth quarter of the MLK Day game has stuck with me a lot, just in terms of his overall IQ. And he only scored like 17 in that game, had 10 assists, didn't blow you away with the stat line, but he's really, really a brilliant player. So I'm going to be interested to watch it, but I think the Suns should win that one. I would imagine they'll be favored in all three because the Portland game is at home. So we'll see. But let's take a quick break and then go out of here with the final five before the All-Star break for the Suns. Before we get out of here, one last break to tell you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. 18 delicious flavors that I love to tell you about. But today we got a special opportunity, a flash sale for the Coconut Puff Built Bar. It's full of luscious chocolate and soft marshmallow. That wonderful, creamy, soft inside that you know and love about Built Bar. And it's made with a premium collagen protein blend. So it's even higher in protein without stacking you up on the calories. The Coconut Puff Bar has 16 grams of protein, just 130 calories, and just 6 grams of sugar. It's the perfect Built Bar. It's exactly what you know and love. 16 grams of protein gets you everything you need for that midday snack, that post-workout pick-me-up, whatever it is. And not too heavy on the calories, just 130. Gluten-free, preservative-free, delicious, and amazing. The Coconut Puff Bar, a flash sale, limited time only, one day, just Friday. For those of you listening, log on now. Use the promo code LOCKEDON at your purchase and pick up the Coconut Puff. It's new. It's incredible. All the coconut flavors I've ever tried at Built Bar have been among my favorites, so I can't recommend it enough. I love them, and I love the coconut, and you should try it too. So order now. BuiltBar.com, promo code locked on, all one word, the name of our network. Try that coconut puff. Take a gander at the rest of the website. I'm sure you'll find something that you love. Quick final segment here. The last five games of the Suns' first half schedule. We still don't know what the second half schedule looks like. So for now, these are the last five games we know the Suns will play this season. But before we get into that, wanted to remind you guys, check out Locked On NBA every single morning, just like our show. Very quick, gets you in and out with everything from the previous night in the association. Scores, storylines, highlights, and everything you need to know to get your morning ready. Ben Golliver comes on once a week, and we have hosts from around the country who do a great job. So wherever you listen to podcasts, subscribe to Locked On NBA. Okay, Sam. So I feel like the final two here are the most interesting. We have Charlotte, Chicago, Minnesota, to say the least.
You don't want to talk about those
at
length?
To say the least, right? Yeah, let's hit
Zach Levine, Devin Booker showdown that I've evidently been waiting for.
They got to listen to this podcast to get ready for that one. Am I right to say they should sweep those three, Charlotte, Chicago, Minnesota? If they don't win all three, it'll be disappointing.
In theory, they should. Minnesota's an interesting team in that they've got a lot of young pieces that I actually really like, but are still like 3 years away from being anything. So like, what's the timeline on Cat? I don't even know anymore. Are they regretting trying to actually pair him up with like one of his best friends at this point in D'Angelo Russell? Similarly, I don't know. That team doesn't really make any sense to me, but yeah, they shouldn't be too much of a threat to the Suns.
I think they should win all three of those, which will give them some nice momentum heading into the Lakers game. And it's somehow, I guess it's not confusing, because I think it's easy to see what the NBA is doing here, in that they're trying to have maybe the second half of the season have a little bit less travel, or at least have some piled up games against the teams nearest you. And so we haven't seen the Suns play the Clippers or the Lakers at all in this first half, except for this one game. And so we'll probably see that more, but it'll be an interesting test. I mean, no Anthony Davis is the expectation, but nevertheless, I mean, this is a juggernaut Lakers team, and I still don't know if the Suns roster has anyone who can do much of anything to stop LeBron James.
Yeah, I mean, you got Jay Crowder for a reason, and he's going to try. Certainly, you feel better about it with Jay Crowder than you would with Kelly Oubre, right? So that's why you got Jay Crowder.
Yeah, sure.
That's not to say that it'll work. But without Anthony Davis, I do think you could make a reasonable case here that the Suns go in as, I mean, is it crazy to say the Suns go in as the favorites in this game without Anthony Davis? I just think like that opens
up. We'll see how things
go
between now and then. I feel like
let's wait a little bit.
Los Angeles, even without Davis, I have a tough time there. But
you're probably right that the away game definitely swings things in their favor.
But it'll be a TNT game, so it'll be a nice marquee matchup. I think, you know, the sort of where I'm looking there, and obviously things will be different. You know, maybe guys get injured between now and then, but just looking forward there, as far as a matchup I think the Suns will get up for. It just is going to be an interesting test because, again, I think we've seen teams, because of the way that the Suns are still coming together, I think there's been some nights where if the opposing team just has a sense of self against this Suns team, I think of those Denver matchups, and there's exceptions. Like, yes, they went in and beat Utah. They beat Denver. Those games are, I guess, anti-examples here. But there are nights where it feels like teams that are just a little bit more cohesive than the Suns tends to present a challenge to them. And I guess that's true of any LeBron James team, but especially this Lakers team, which has just been pretty devastating. And I think the offense of the Suns against the Lakers defense will probably be the biggest challenge the Suns have faced in that regard to that point.
For sure. But again, though, I feel so much more confident about that without Davis. Sure. I feel so much better if it's Chris Paul and Devin Booker lining up, you know, and like they see Kyle Kuzma and Marc Gasol in front of them as the guys they're attacking.
Lucky to catch the Lakers without him and the Bucks without Drew. That would be nice if you could do that.
That's a good point. Yeah. Well, and it was lucky to catch Brooklyn without KD and Kyrie too, and it doesn't always turn out the way you want regardless. So obviously, you know, you still got to commit to your game plan and execute ultimately if you want to come away with the win. This is still going to be a hard game. The Golden State game, which is right after this, is still going to be a hard game too. And man, like just looking at these Western Conference standings, it's just, these teams could stack up, like these teams 4 through 9 or so right now could still stack up in any order between now and the All-Star break.
What are you looking at as we like those last two games will be a nice test, I think, going into the break. I think it would be sort of, I mean, you know, the Suns are in a mode of competing at the highest level every single night. So like, I wouldn't be worried about the East stretch being the end, but at the same time, I think it'll be nice to kind of have those tests going into the break. But just generally, what are you looking for with these final eight? Like, what are the benchmarks or checkpoints that you want to see coming off this Nets loss?
Well, I think it starts to shift towards a conversation of will the Suns be in the playoffs at all, which we always believed they would be, but I think we still recognized at the beginning of the season there was a chance that they collapsed. It was, you know, I mean, there's still a chance they collapse, but I think we're all pretty confident now that the Suns are a playoff team. So it's about shifting your attitude towards playing like a playoff team consistently. And so it comes back to something we already talked about. I think it's shifting attitudes about defense and being able to make adjustments on the fly, depending on your opponent, is going to be something I'm really keying in on going forward. I think it's fantastic news that Chris Paul, after a slightly rough start in the first 10 or 15 games or so, Chris Paul is back. He's doing Chris Paul things. He hasn't lost a step. He's making all the right shots. Devin Booker is, I would say he's almost back. He had the player of the week, a fantastic week, obviously. I would say he's just ever so slightly a step below what I was expecting from him this season. So, but for the most part, he's back too. So it's like, now that you have those two pieces kind of locked firmly into place, what interesting wrinkles can you get out of the offense when it's flowing like that? So it's about maximizing and optimizing DeAndre Ayton, especially when teams decide to do stuff like Brooklyn did and switch. It's, can Mikal Bridges add any more steps to his game? to his repertoire to kind of be a guy who, you know, takes a little bit of pressure off other players. Those are the sorts of things we're looking at here.
I agree with most of the things you rifled through there. I want to just see a game that it all comes together in. Like, I want to see some or most of that happen in one game. You know, I think the Philly game... It feels like
we've talked so much, all of us podcasters, I think, about what the potential of this team's ceiling is.
Yeah.
And we've never seen it. we've never seen, like, Ayton and Paul and Booker all have a great game at once. And to be fair, that's a lot to ask for, but it hasn't happened yet.
That Philly game, I think, was to me, their best played game of the season. I don't know if you agree, but I want to see one where, both of the guards do what they're capable of. You know, it felt like every single bubble game was like that. You know, it felt like everybody was doing pretty much the max of what they were capable of, even though Ayton didn't always have super loud box score numbers. It felt like everyone was kind of playing at the best of what their role was. And we've seen that on a certain, you know, number of nights this season, but getting one of those maybe against Portland or LA or Golden State would be nice to see heading into the break. But I think in that stretch, they go 4-1. I think they only lose to the Lakers. So that means 6-2 stretch to close. That's that would put them at 23-12. I mean, that would be really nice heading into the break. If they would feel pretty good about themselves, I think.
I mean, could you imagine this team being on pace? What is that, a 54-55 win pace, roughly?
Yeah.
That's definitely overshooting what we were expecting preseason, I think. I mean, preseason.
Yeah, I think like high 40s, something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think my official projection was like 42-30, which is like a 47 win pace in a normal season or something. So that would be a great result.
They need it, though, with how tough the West is. Like,
well, they don't need it.
I think the Jazz being so good may kind of up the stakes of getting, if you want to get that top four seed, like, you got to be that good.
Yeah, if you want to get that top four seed, for sure. We do have to remember, though, that we keep upping the expectations on this team. Going into the season, I just want to make the playoffs. Like,
sure,
I was
but deservedly, you play well and the expectations, the goalpost moves back.
You don't want it to be dragged out away from you. I am still waiting, and I'm just not sure if it's going to happen. Like, Portland doesn't have a good net rating. San Antonio doesn't have a good net rating, but they're right there with Phoenix in the standings. And so I'm just waiting. San Antonio's a really interesting team, and I'm curious how it's going to look when we match up with them. They don't scare me, but they keep winning games regardless, is kind of how it feels like.
Yeah.
And, I wonder if the correction is coming for those two teams where it's like, you were winning a lot of close games and that was luck, and now you're actually a 500 team, or if this really is who they are, in which case the West just becomes that much scarier. Like, the fact that Denver is the eighth seed right now is insane.
The possible MVP is on the eighth seeded team in the West. Yeah. It'll be interesting. It's been a while since I was as excited for like every Suns game as I am just to watch them and see them grow and see what kind of happens. But we will have to see. I'll hold myself to that 6-2 and check back in on my own estimation when we get to the break. But thanks, Sam, for breaking it all down with us. Where can people check you out?
Follow me on Twitter at S Cooper Hoops. You'll see links to all the rest of my stuff from there. Thank you for having me on, as always.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Check out the timeline there every week. And Sam contributes with us at Brightside regularly as well. So a lot
less
of good
than
stuff.
I should.
Okay. Well, then we'll hold you. We'll hold me to the 6-2 record, and then we'll hold you to more written content in the second half as we get to. I feel like at a certain point, it's going to be hard not to just spend spare time thinking about this team. So I feel like they'll pull you back in. But that'll do it for us. Everybody have a great weekend. I will be back with Brandon on Monday, breaking down that back to back Friday Saturday. On the road in New Orleans and Memphis. And I hope you all enjoy watching. And like I said, the weekend as a whole, we will be back on Monday.